You are listening to Intelligent Investing with Glenn Least. In today's episode, we are going to be talking about baby steps number 5, 6, and 7 with the Financial Peace University. So stay tuned. It's going to be a great episode today. All right. Welcome to another episode of Intelligent Investing. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about the Dave Ramsey Financial Peace University baby steps number 5, 6, and 7. I know some of you guys have been listening to the other episodes and are very familiar with the baby steps. So let's just pick up right where we left off. So baby step number 5, that is save for your child's college fund. And so with this step, there's a couple different ways we can accomplish saving for your child's college fund. One of the most popular ones would be what's called a 529 plan. Now, the 529 plan is a great vehicle, but it does have some rules and some restrictions with it. So let's kind of start with the basics. So the way a 529 plan works is very similar to like a Roth IRA. You can put money in, it gets to grow tax free as long as it's used for education or higher education expenses as outlined by whatever the 529 plan allows. So used to be just college education. Now some of the 529 plans do allow you to use funding for certain private schools and elementary and high school and junior high. So they have kind of expanded that a little bit. And any money you put in there, again, gets to grow tax free as long as it's used for education. So that can be a great tool to save money and put away for your kiddo. The one downside is if you don't use it for education, the IRS does impose some early withdrawal penalties and it counts as income. So that is the one downside to the 529 is if you save money for little junior and he decides not to go to college and you've put $50,000 in this 529, if you wanted to take that $50,000 out and give it to the child and they don't want to go to school, you're going to have to pay a 10% early withdrawal plus it's going to count as ordinary income. So that might be 10% early withdrawal plus another 12% tax. So just keep that in mind. You never really want to overfund the 529 plan. And so when you're putting money into it, you think of it as this is a great way to pay most of their education or a part of it. But what you don't want to do is have, you know, $250,000 in a 529 plan and little junior decides just to go to community college and then in-state and really maybe only spend 50 or 60 of it. And then you got this huge chunk of money that's in this 529 plan that you're going to have to pay a 20+% penalty to get out. And so just keep that in mind as you're saving for the 529 plans is it's a great way to do it. There's also what's called an ESA. That's another great way to save for your kiddo. The 529 plan versus the ESA, they're very similar. Really, the main difference between the two of them is just how much you can contribute, really. The 529 plans allow you to contribute quite a good amount of money, whereas the ESA is that you can contribute a little bit less. So ESAs, it's usually around $2,000 a year, whereas the 529 is significantly more than that. In fact, the 529 is up to $14,000 per year or whatever the gift exclusion is at the time. So those are some of the key differences. You can change the account owners on either the 529 or the ESA at any point in time. So if you want to have it be for little junior, and he doesn't go to college, you can then change it to another sibling, which is fine. Or you can change it to yourself. However, I think at the end of the day, if you're trying to save money for a little junior to go to school, you'd like to see those monies go to little junior. So, I usually don't like to reassign those funds, to someone else in the family, but it is possible. There is a maximum contribution amounts on the 529 cumulatively. It depends on the state, but it could be anywhere from 200 to 500,000 is the maximum contribution limit, for pretty much anything that can be put into it. So from multiple different sources and then the ESA, there's really no contribution limit. So they're just, you know, a little bit different, with how they're structured. Most of them, are used almost the exact same way. They're used for college education funds. And in fact, one of the things I like to do is map out how much you have to save to have a decent amount in 529 plan. So if you're like, okay, my kiddo is say 4 and they want to go to school. So we've got 14, you know, years to pretty much save. So if they're going to school at say 18 to go to college, how much you need to save per month? And so I'll just quickly do some math. If you're saving $75 a month from age 4 to age 18, if you do that and averaging a 12% return, you'll have a little over $30,000. So getting started now and saving can really be helpful. And again, the 529 plan may not be the only way that they can pay for college. Maybe they get scholarships, maybe they do a work study program, maybe they pay for some of it out of pocket, but this is a great way for you to really put a dent in their college savings. One thing I do like to do is I have the 529 plan and we fund those and those are great. I like to pair that with a custodial account, meaning that they have the 529 plan. It's great to get some of those tax benefits, but we also set up a regular brokerage custodial account for the minor, and we fund those at the same time. Now, those brokerage accounts don't have anywhere near the same restrictions, meaning you can use those funds however you like. If you don't use it for college, there's no like penalties. You can use it for a car, for a home down payment, for a wedding, whatever you want. So I like to have money saved in both a custodial brokerage account and a 529 plan for the kiddos. Just that way you have a little bit in each bucket and you're not having to worry about whether or not they're going to go to school and use those funds and are they going to be hit with penalties. And so a good story that I have is I have a client of mine who came on board I think the kiddo is around 18 or 19. And when they were younger, maybe 4 or 5, something happened and there's some sort of medical malpractice, but there was a payout at that time because the child was somehow injured. I don't know all the details, but I think it was like a $50,000 award settlement. And so they took that $50,000, put it all in the 529 plan, which, you know, on the surface is a great idea. You know, send little junior to college and, you know, when he turns 18, there's a good sum of money. Well, at age 18, that $50,000 has turned into like $280,000 with no additional funds put in. And so, which is great. Little junior has a plenty of money in this 529 plan. However, I think they're going to just a state school. You know, they're going to get their college education, but how much is a state school going to cost all 4 years? Is it going to be $280,000? I mean, maybe if they go to graduate school and then maybe go to a doctorate, they can, you know, spend down some of that money, but I don't think they're going wanting to go past 4 years. So even at a higher end, we may be spending $120,000, $150,000 of that $280,000. And so there's a big chunk of money that is still allotted for that individual, but it's in that 529 plan. And so if they want to get the money back out, they have to pay those taxes and penalties. So that's where in that same scenario, say that person had gotten $50,000, what I might have done at that time is put some of it into the 529, because I really think that's a great vehicle, but also put some of it into a brokerage account, a custodial account, maybe 50-50, 25 into each of them. So that way in the 529 plan, we've got maybe 140,000, but in the brokerage account, we have 140,000. So that way we don't have too much in that 529 plan, just because, like I said, the only reason is those penalties, if you don't use it for education, are pretty high. And I'm just not a big fan of those. It's your money. You should be able to maximize the leverage, use, and enjoyment of every single dollar and not have to be worried about paying those IRS taxes and fees. So saving for the 529, saving through the ESA, saving through the custodial brokerage account are all great ways to do it. When you are saving for your child to, you know, really improve their life, to go to college, whatever that may be, we want to do that simultaneously while saving for our own retirement. In fact, if we were to do a priority list, saving for our own retirement, us getting out of debt, us having an emergency fund is far more important than saving for junior to go to college. One of the best gifts that we can give our kids is that way when we're ready to retire, we're financially sound and we're no longer having to rely on our children financially to help us out. And so it is really just important that we do everything we can to make sure we're in good shape. And that's going to be the priority. But then once we're in good shape, yeah, absolutely. Let's save for the kiddos. Let's save money for them for their future. I think that's a fantastic idea. So even a little bit, I do 529s, ESAs, I do the custodial brokerage accounts, I do all of them. And they're all very similar. I think the only difference with the 529 ESAs versus the brokerage in how you can invest them is some of the 529 plans may have a little less options as far as what's available. They're kind of a little bit more restricted for the mutual funds that you can pick. There's still a lot of great ones, don't get me wrong. Whereas the brokerage account, you could buy anything in that account. And so sometimes it is nice having that flexibility flexibility, especially if we're designing and creating a portfolio for our clients. I like having that brokerage account that has just a little bit different of an investment allocation. So that's my thought on saving for the kiddos. It's a great idea. We should be doing it, but we shouldn't be doing it at the expense of not saving for ourselves. So it's all going to be in the right order. So baby step four, saving for the college fund for the kiddo. Let's move on to baby step six. So baby step six is paying off your home early. In fact, even if we took a step back, baby step four, five, and six are all usually done almost at the same time. You know, definitely baby step five and six can be done simultaneously. Baby step four and five can be done simultaneously, but you can also do baby step six at the same time too. One example is I have a 30-year mortgage. I think my mortgage is like $1,550 a month or something like that. And I calculated if I pay $2,000, just rounded it up, that I'd have the mortgage paid off in 11 years instead of 30 years. So for me, that's really going to accelerate the payoff of it. And there's a couple different ways of, you know, really getting towards paying off your home early. There's the bi-monthly payment system where you're paying, instead of paying basically once a month, you're paying twice a month. And how that works out is there's 26 pay periods in the year, 26 two-week periods, and there's only 12 months. And so if you do monthly, you're going to make 12 payments, whereas if you do every 2 weeks, you're technically going to have 26 pay periods. And if you take 26 and divide it by how many months that is, you're going to have 13 months. And so by doing it every other week or twice a month, you're going to actually get one extra payment in per year. And that's going to go usually towards principal. So that's kind of how the math of that works. I like those programs. They're great. The only caveat is you should be able to do that for free online with your mortgage company. You shouldn't be paying extra or paying for some program that sets it up for you. You can just go online and through your mortgage lender, set that all up. I know I can. I've got United Wholesale Mortgage and I can just go online and I can do extra payments for principal. I can do scheduled out payments. I can do twice a month. I can dedicate, or dictate what goes to principal, what goes to interest. And so it's nowadays, there should be no excuse to have to pay for some sort of bi-monthly mortgage payoff system. So paying off your home early is huge and it's something we should all strive to do. I've heard a couple different schools of thought, and one of them that I don't 100% buy into, but we'll kind of talk through in a second, is some people I've heard, well, you don't want to pay off your home early because you're going to lose the potential interest rate deduction that you would get. And that idea is just, in my opinion, not true. I've run the math, and yeah, you may get a little bit of an interest reduction on taxes, but at the same time, if it's at the expense of you carrying your mortgage longer, it's like, okay, well, how much of an interest deduction is it really versus how much am I paying in interest on this loan over the course of, 15, 20, 30 years? And so not paying off your home early just to get that interest rate deduction for longer just doesn't make sense to me. I pencil out the math. Dave Ramsey does on his program. He looks through and it just doesn't make sense. Even if you have a really low interest rate, say your interest rate's 2.99 and you go, well, my home's appreciating at 5 or 6%. So why would I want to pay it off early? Well, to have it paid off so that way you're not paying interest, even though it's maybe 2.99% interest. If you look at your mortgage statement online, you can see for the first large part of your loan, maybe like 10 or 15 years. I know for mine, at least, I look at the payment and most of it's going to interest. Very little of it's going to actual principal. So paying off your home early is just a great idea. Some people, when they get their tax refunds, they kick a bunch of money towards their home to pay off sooner. Some people do that bi-monthly. The way I do it is I just, have the amount that I'm going to pay per month. And so if my mortgage is $1,550, I just set it to pay $2,000 a month every month. And the additional $450 goes towards the principal each month. So I don't have to do any kind of bi-monthly or anything like that. I just do it every month, but I make a principal payment every month as well, like an additional one. So paying off your home early is just a great idea. I don't buy into the idea that keeping your mortgage, even if it's at a lower rate, is better for you. I just, you know, with how much interest you're paying, I think it just makes sense to pay off early. I just have a hard time entertaining any of the other ideas and justifying why they're in your best interest. So number six, pay off your home early. And that's a big item. I mean, paying off your home early is huge. And I've met quite a few people in my practice over the years that they had made it a point, you know, during their working years to really pay down their mortgage. And now they're towards the end of their career and they're like, hey, I don't have a mortgage. And it makes retirement and makes their financial life so much easier because that's one less thing that they have to worry about paying each month. And so if you think about the math of that, so say you've got Glenn's mortgage or whatever, and it's $1,550 a month. And, you know, in retirement, you've got $4,000 a month of income coming in. Well, $1,500 of it's going to the mortgage each month. That means you only have you only have $2,500 left to pay for your living expenses, your food, your medical care, your gas, electricity, all that. So getting your mortgage paid off sooner is really going to help you tremendously. One, be in a better spot financially and save thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars of interest. So I think it's a great idea. Right now, unfortunately, is not a great time to do any kind of refinancing. The interest rates are just so high that you're probably better off just using whatever mortgage you have right now and then just aggressively paying off that mortgage quicker is probably going to be the better route. I know during the pandemic when interest rates were really low, a lot of people were doing the refinancing of their home and it seemed to make a lot of sense as far as the interest that they're saving on it. Yeah, a lot of times they had to pay some closing costs and some points on the mortgage and all that. But there is a way for you to calculate whether or not that was worth it. And I think one of the things I'd heard from one of my mortgage lenders is if you plan on keeping the house long term and the price to do the refinance was going to save you enough money where you'd make that savings back within like 2 years, it was worth the refinancing. So an example is, say it was going to cost me $2,400 to do a refinance from say 4% down to 3%, just for example, it's going to cost me $2,400, but I was saving $200 a month on my mortgage, you know, just in pure payment and interest. And so basically $200, you know, a month times 12, that'd be $2,400 in 1 year, which is less than the 2 year mark. That seems like that makes a lot of sense. Now, that payoff was going to take 5 or 6 years to kind of equal out with the whatever cost to refinance, then yeah, it didn't make as much sense. So that's kind of how I've heard it was good. But right now, it's probably not anything anyone's talking about because interest rates are so much higher, and I doubt you'll be able to do a refinance and get any kind of better rates. So you're just probably most likely much better off paying extra and be aggressive with paying off your current mortgage because you don't have to do any kind of refinance or anything like that. You don't have to pay any extra points and you can just knock down that principal pretty quick. So last baby step is build wealth and give. And so, you know, a lot of times, you know, I don't know why in our culture we look at people who have money, and I know not everyone does, but sometimes there's this perception that if you have money, that's somehow a bad thing, or you ill got the money, or money's somehow evil. Well, money's just a tool. It's neither good nor bad. It's what you do with it. And so when you don't have any debt and you're in a great spot financially, that really frees you up to give and live like no one else. And so if you're a naturally generous person and you're in a great spot financially and you've got all your stuff, all your ducks in a row and you know, just a great spot, you're going to probably be more apt to be more generous because you've done the legwork to get yourself in a much better financial spot where you can, you know, give. And Dave tells many stories on his show of how sometimes giving away money can be the most fun you'll ever have when it comes to money. Is giving it away and sowing seeds into different areas or different purposes, different causes that you're really passionate about. And I 100% agree. You know, over my lifetime, some of the most fun that I've had is when I've been able to give back or be very generous and really just bless people. And so that should be always our encouragement is, you know, we want to build wealth so that way we can live and give and frankly, also enjoy some of the fruits of our labor. You know, if we're making all these steps and working hard to get out of debt and get on a game plan and save money, you know, the end goal is why? Why are we doing this? Well, it's to build wealth and to, you know, build a generational legacy for you and your family, but also to give and to be generous. I mean, you'd be surprised how much impact one person can have with their generosity. I've seen that happen, you know, time after time where one person had done a good job, you know, with their finances and was generous and said, you know, I'm going to give this extravagant gift away, and another person received it, and it was just life-changing for them. And then other people saw that extravagant giving and then were also encouraged to give. So sometimes it can cause this chain reaction of generosity, which is just an amazing thing. So baby step 7 is to build wealth and give away, and to be generous and to sow into the causes that you're passionate about. And so at the end of the day, we need to look at why we're doing all these baby steps, why we're putting in the hard work now. And that's a way you can be in a great spot financially. You can build a legacy for you and your family. You can have those things that you've always wanted, and to live a generous life. I've heard the antidote to greed is generosity. So if we really want to be masters over our money and not our money be masters over us, we need to learn to be grateful for what we have and be generous, you know, and to be generous people with our time, energy, talents, and money. So when we do that, I guarantee you'll live a much richer life as opposed to if you just kept it all for yourself. So with that, I hope you enjoyed today's segment covering baby steps 5, 6, and 7 on the Dave Ramsey Financial Peace University. If you haven't already, please make sure you subscribe to our podcast. And if you're wanting to talk to me about working through the baby steps, I am a endorsed local provider. I'd love to help you walk through these steps, become financially independent. And I just love this stuff. So give me a call today, 928-225-2474, or you can email me at intelligentinvesting@wtwealthmanagement.com. With that, Glenn Least signing off.